All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us in this last of the concurrent sessions of the 2012 General Insurance Seminar. As some of you know, Alina and I got recently married. A few people told us it was good for newly married couples to spend some time together and take up a hobby. We had to think about this and decided to write a general insurance paper. Looking back on it, I'm not sure that's exactly what people were recommending that we do. Okay, the paper that we're presenting today is a practical guide to commercial insurance pricing and aims to provide actuaries involved in commercial insurance pricing with information and recommendations to help them target their work to deliver more effective business outcomes. We see the actuarial role in the pricing of commercial insurance still being in the early stages, which makes it an exciting area for those who are keen on innovation and breaking new ground. As always, the paper covers the breadth and depth of topics that we're unable to cover off in the 40 minutes that we have today for this presentation. As such, we have picked some key areas to present today. These are understanding commercial insurance, translating technical analysis into actionable insights, data and the pricing actuary, and adapting pricing techniques to commercial insurance. Alina and I are going to do a bit of a tag team through the presentation, just to make sure you don't get too bored listening to one of us for too long. We'll start with a brief overview of commercial insurance. There are 1.9 million different companies registered within Australia. These companies cover a wide range of industries, are exposed to very different risks, and can have significantly different insurance needs. The commercial insurers react to these very different needs by offering a number of different insurance products. The three that we've shown on the slide here represent commercial property, covering commercial property for fire and peril events; public and products liability, covering the legal liability of the insured to pay compensation for personal injury and property damage; and commercial motor, which provides cover for commercial vehicles such as sedans, vans, semi-trailers, buses, agricultural vehicles, and mobile and earth-moving equipment. Other major products include business packages, fleet, industrial special risks, or ISR, workers' compensation, and marine. These policies are typically sold to customers through intermediaries, such as brokers, authorised representatives, or underwriting agencies. On the slide, we have Aon and Marsh, who, with $2.6 billion and $2.3 billion in premium in Australia, respectively, are the two largest brokers. The third box represents Steadfast, who are a cluster group of over 250 brokers and make up roughly $3.6 billion in gross written premium each year. We note that the premium figures quoted here do include some personal lines insurance. There are also insurers who sell commercial insurance direct to the customer. The commercial insurance market can broadly be broken up into two main segments. The first, which is serviced by both the intermediaries and the direct insurer, is the small to medium enterprise segment. This covers small businesses such as mechanics, bakeries, and removalists. The insurance sold to this segment is the most similar to the standard personal lines insurance portfolios in that it will typically have significant volumes of data, reasonable data quality, automatic premium rating with limited case underwriting, and limited facultative reinsurance. As such, many of the standard actuarial pricing concepts and techniques are able to be applied to this segment with minor but important modifications. The second segment, which is almost always intermediated, is the corporate segment, relating to the insurance sold to very large corporations, such as BHP Billiton, Woolworths, and Telstra. The insurance needs and the risk exposures of these businesses can be very different, and coupled with large insurance premiums, which for an individual company can easily be in the millions of dollars, results in tailored insurance products with a high level of case underwriting and a large level of facultative reinsurance. This results in the standard actuarial pricing methods being less applicable for the corporate segment, and that the actuary needs to be innovative in identifying and how they add value to the segment. So we've talked at a high level about the different portfolios and customers and distribution methods that can make commercial insurance a challenging area. We're now going to look in a bit more detail at one of the main commercial portfolios, business packages. Imagine being an actuary, just starting a new job in commercial pricing, taking responsibility for the actuarial pricing of the business pack products after 5 years of working in domestic motor. On the first day, you meet with the portfolio manager and ask him to give you an overview of what's covered in the product. Commercial property. This covers the buildings, contents and stock of the business. The majority of the losses will come from fire and natural perils. It is typically one of the largest sections in the portfolio. Business interruption. This provides cover for interruptions that occurred to the insured. Our standard cover will allow the insured to claim when there's been damage to the property where the business is located. But we offer an expansion of cover to also include damage to suppliers or customers' premises. Public and products liability provides cover for the legal liability of the insured to pay compensation for personal injury and property damage. This is also one of our largest sections, and being the only long-tail section adds some complexity to the portfolio. Burglary provides cover for theft of contents or stock. Plate glass provides cover for breakage of internal and external glass and signs. Machinery breakdown covers damage to machinery caused by breakdown or damage to boilers caused by explosion. General property covers tools of trade for theft, fire and accidental damage. Computer breakdown provides cover for computers for fire and perils, accidental damage and breakdown. This section can also be extended to include a business interruption component. Money provides cover for the theft of money. In addition to these covers, we also offer tax investigation, personal accident and employee dishonesty. After listening to this, you then realise that this is going to be a much more challenging product to look after than you thought, and set some time aside to understand the product in more detail. So you spend time over the next 2 weeks to read the policy wording in detail, spend some time with a portfolio manager to understand product strategy in the market, shadow a case underwriter for a day to understand how case underwriting impacts the portfolio and what is considered on a risk-by-risk basis. Spend some time with the claims area to understand how they process and settle claims. Run some example policies through the book rating algorithm to understand the current book rates. And talk to some pricing actuaries who have expertise in long tail, as this is a completely new area for you. A couple of weeks pass and you feel that you have a much clearer idea of the portfolio. And then the portfolio manager starts talking about different policy wordings. An insurer could sell what appears to be a single product under quite different policy wordings depending on factors such as the distribution channel or the industry of the customer. To illustrate this point, we've compared the money cover of a business pack product sold by a single insurer through a bank, which is wording A, and through a broker, which is wording B. In particular, we focus on the increase in sum insured that is provided automatically around public holidays. Wording A offers 60 days of increased cover before Christmas and 30 days before Easter, whilst wording B offers increased cover for 56 days before... Sorry, that should be more than that. That should be... lost that number, sorry. 56 before and 21 days after Christmas and 42 days before and 7 days after Easter. In addition, wording B offers increased cover for other celebrated events of a festive, religious or ethnic nature relevant to the insured business. In total, wording B provides more than double the number of days of increased cover compared to wording A. This example only relates to a single clause on a small section of a policy, but it illustrates the differences that can exist on what appears to be the same product. Over a whole policy wording, these differences can add up and result in very substantial variations in claims costs. It is important for the actuary to talk to the portfolio manager to get a good understanding of the key wordings that are offered under a single product and of the most significant differences between these wordings as well as any expectations of the variation in claims costs. And also, when modelling the portfolio, the actuary should incorporate a factor which identifies the difference in policy wordings. I will now hand over to Alina, who will talk about pricing dynamics.
It's also important to understand that in commercial insurance, there are a number of factors that influence the price that an insurer might charge for a single risk, both over time and relative to other insurers. Firstly, differences in the way insurers look at the profitability of a portfolio can impact the price, their pricing strategy. So three potential measures that an insurer might use to understand the profitability of a portfolio are the profit and loss, the actual current year experience or an assessment of the underlying profitability. These measures are actually impacted by a number of factors. For example, the P&L of a long-tail portfolio can be impacted by prior year releases. Also, the incidence of large and natural peril claims can result in the current year loss ratio to be quite different to the underlying experience. It's therefore very important for the actuary to both understand the different measures that are being used across the insurer and also understand the reasons behind the different messages that these measures may be sending. The second point there is there are actually a number of factors which can result in different but valid assessments of the technical premium. Some of the key reasons are corporate strategy, so including things like capital adequacy, investment strategy, reinsurance, and the level of expenses, both at an insurer level and also allocated to individual portfolios. Different insurers may also have different assessments of the frequency and size of infrequent events. The third point there is product strategy. The strategy developed by a portfolio manager will also influence the pricing for a portfolio. For example, the portfolio manager may have a strategy where products is sold as a loss leader. The actuary really needs to make sure their analysis is targeted and supports the product strategy. The fourth point there is relationships. Because the intermediaries are involved in this market, there actually may be pressure from intermediaries to restrict the level of premium increases on the portfolio or to apply discounts on the policies that they sell through the insurer. Now, the last but not least feature of commercial insurance is the market cycle. Now, in a hard market, the prices are high and insurers are making super profits. This results in new entrants to the market, including overseas insurers and Lloyd's syndicates. Competition then increases, which causes the prices to drop and the soft market begins. Now, due to the high level of uncertainty in the underlying performance of a commercial portfolio, the price reductions generally overshoot and the market becomes unprofitable. This causes insurers to start losing money, but it generally, however, takes a shock to the market, such as a failure of an insurer or a large catastrophic event, for the hard market to begin. Now, a corporate insurer is actually a lot more impacted by the market cycle due to it being much easier for capital to enter that market. Now, what can an actuary do? Well, in response to this pricing dynamic, we think that the actuary needs to work with a portfolio manager to develop a philosophy for the pricing of the portfolio that provides a clear direction as to how the different parts of the market cycle will be addressed. This should include things like the target profitability over the whole over the whole insurance cycle and the minimum target profitability at the softest part of the cycle. The strategy should also focus on identifying the profitable segments of the portfolio and to retain and the unprofitable segments to shed as the market softens in price. And finally, it's important to understand whether there's potentially an opportunity to improve the offering to an end customer by providing additional cover at a discounted premium rather than reducing the overall premium of the policy. Now, the next area we'd like to cover is how do you translate technical analysis into actionable insights? Now, in our view, for an actuary to maximize the business value achieved from their analysis, they really need to work in partnership with the portfolio manager. We think that this is particularly important in commercial insurance due to all the complexities around the product that we've described. Now, there are a number of benefits around working with the portfolio manager. Things like it will enable the actuary to improve the quality of their technical analysis by incorporating information from the wider business. There is also much greater likelihood of action being taken as a result of the analysis, as the portfolio manager is much more likely to trust the work as they have been involved throughout the process. So what does this mean for an actuary from a practical perspective? Well, imagine the following scenario. So 6 months ago, you set up a regular monthly meeting with a portfolio manager to discuss the strategy, issues, and priorities for the portfolio. 5 minutes before this month's meeting, you get a call from the portfolio manager who says that she can't make it. So the business volumes have been dropping significantly in the portfolio, and the CEO is on her case, and she really needs the time to put together a plan to work out how to address the issue. You ask her whether she knows what is causing the volumes to reduce and if the reductions are across the board or in specific segments. She says, not at this point, although the distribution guys always seem to complain about price. You suggest, how about we adjust the actuarial priorities to focus on doing some analysis on the renewal rates and the strike rates of the portfolio? And we can spend the hour to kick off the work. She agrees, and in the meeting, you cover off, one, the outcomes of the analysis, which is to put the portfolio manager in a position where she can explain to the CEO what is causing the volumes to drop, where the volumes are dropping, and have a clear plan how to address the issue. You also discuss any unusual accounts in the portfolio which may be distorting the results, such as the new scheme in pizza restaurants, which is boosting the volumes and strike rates in this segment. And thirdly, any changes in the underwriting standards. The portfolio manager tells you that they've had some big fires from policyholders who use EPS as an insulation product. And as a result, they decide to start to individually underwrite EPS to account. You decide that this problem is a great opportunity to use machine learning, which is something that one of your personal lines colleagues has been talking about, and saying that it can really allow you to achieve quick results. Now, you prepare a first cut of the model and discuss with the portfolio manager some of the unusual results around volume drops in South Australia that you've seen, particularly in the trade segment of the market. The portfolio manager is initially surprised by this result, and you can see that she doesn't really believe you. However, after you take her through the analysis in a bit more detail and clearly show that the number of trade businesses that you insure has halved in the last year, she calls the head of distribution in South Australia, who explains that they have actually been under the pump in the trade segment, as a niche ABC insurer has launched a very targeted trades product, which is exactly in line with the needs of the segment. Now, the portfolio manager is now feeling a lot more comfortable with your analysis and invites you to a kickoff meeting to discuss whether you can launch a new trades product which will enable you to better compete with ABC. I will now pass to James, who will discuss the importance of data quality.
Okay, I like the slide, so I like the picture. Historically, there's been a limited focus on the quantity and quality of data that has been collected for commercial insurers. This is due to a number of factors, including commercial insurance tending to be run on legacy systems with little or no data validation rules, a lack of investment in data analytics resulting in less incentive for the insurer to focus on data quality, and pushback from intermediaries around the collection of additional information. Having poor data quality is a key issue for any analysis, as even though the analysis may be theoretically correct and have clear, actionable recommendations, putting garbage data in will result in garbage results and recommendations coming out. It might look a little bit different, a little bit neater, but it's still garbage. Some of the key data quality issues in commercial insurance may include bulk entry of policies or claims, where policy or claims information is aggregated before being entered in the system, late processing of policies, structured data fields not being available for key pieces of information, data entry not being available at an individual risk location, particularly for corporate insurance. Prior to any analysis, the actuary should make sure that they have an understanding of the key data issues in the portfolio and how these will impact the results of the analysis. Given the issues that do exist in the portfolio, the actuary may find themselves needing to invest some time in improving the data asset prior to completing their analysis. The actuary needs to make sure that they balance the time they spend in improving the data, in investing in data improvements against the key roles in pricing. The three key areas that the actuary can consider are cleansing of the data currently available in the system, enhancement of the data asset by incorporating data from additional sources, either from within the company or from outside the company, and taking a role on as data champion for the insurer. It is important that the actuary make sure that they don't end up owning the data issues, but instead that they are taking an active role in driving the improvements. Some specific examples of enhancements to the data asset that an actuary can do through either data cleansing the data or by accessing additional information can include using text mining methods to extract valuable information such as industry, cause of loss, or excess out of free format text fields, either manually or through data mining techniques. Using external aggregated data to understand the premium volumes and the performance of the insurer by segment. For example, the National Claims and Policy Database allows for the insurer to compare their own experience for liability and professional risks by state and two-digit ANZIC. From a geographic perspective, there are data sets available for purchase which provide geocoded features of interest information. Some of these data sets include information on over 200,000 features of interest, such as railway stations, industrial complexes, to restaurants and pubs. If the insurer has geocoded their existing portfolio, then they can combine these two sources of information to create almost limitless additional factors which may impact the claims experience of each individual risk. Some examples of potential factors which might be worth investigating may include the number of pubs within a 1 kilometre radius, the distance to the nearest railway station, or the proportion of buildings within a 1 kilometre radius which are commercial, industrial or residential. Other external data is available from third-party data providers such as VADA or Dun & Bradstreet, who have data sets available for purchase that include detailed information on Australian businesses. This information includes industry, number of employees, incorporation date of the business, turnover, and financial behaviours such as commercial finance demand, and can be used to enable the insurer to cleanse existing fields, incorporate the new fields into their modelling, and to understand the market share of the insurer by different factors. A third source of external data is from the ABS, which may include census data to support geospatial analysis or by providing information about the size of different industries. Elena will now look at some of the technical issues around commercial insurance.
I'll provide an overview of some of the key considerations from a technical pricing perspective, and there's a lot more detail in the paper. So the first area of focus is large losses, and the key reason why it's is a focus is because commercial insurance large losses are very large, much larger than personal lines. So to illustrate this point, we've put together a couple of examples of large losses that occurred since 2000. So the first one there is the Kendrick versus BlueScope Steel in the Australian Steel Mill Services, which is a joint workers' comp and liability claim, which cost a total of $16 million. So in this case, a man was driving home from a 12-hour shift along an internal road within the steelworks, at which point there was a collision between his car and a 47-ton dump truck. The second example there is the destruction of the Mount Stromlo Observatory during the 2003 Canberra bushfires, where the insurers paid a total of $35 million. In addition, the broker actually was found partially liable for not recommending the right cover and had to pay $27 million to cover the remaining costs. And finally, Aristocrat. This was a class action which settled for $145 million. So I guess that puts things in perspective that this is an important area. And actually, large losses can make up as much as 70% of the costs for portfolios such as corporate ISR. And basically, as a result, the technical price is heavily impacted by assumptions on the claims frequency and the size of large losses. However, at the same time, actually estimating the large losses is quite challenging, as the actual claims experience, actual historical claims experience, can often not be reflective of the underlying experience. Firstly, large losses are very infrequent, and therefore the insurer can actually be exposed to much larger claims than have been observed to date. For example, an insurer who has a portfolio of professional indemnity may not have experienced a large successful class action. Secondly, changes in business mix over time may result in the historical experience also not being reflective of the future underlying experience, as an insurer may no longer be exposed to the types of risks which were impacted by the large losses in the past. And thirdly, the large loss experience can actually be quite heavily impacted by the skill of the case underwriter, particularly in the corporate space. Now, to tackle these challenges, it's important for the actuary to perform a review with the portfolio manager and with claims of the large losses that have been observed, and to actually get an understanding of what caused the historical large losses and whether any changes in business mix are likely to impact the future underlying large loss experience. It's also important to consider whether the large loss experience that has been observed is reflective of the large losses the insurer is actually exposed to. And finally, it's important to benchmark the insurer's own large loss experience against external sources. And some examples of these sources are things like reinsurance reports and individual court judgments for liability and PI. Now, the second technical consideration I'd like to focus on is a long tail. There's actually 35% of the gross written premium in commercial lines comes from long tail portfolios. And in this case, the actuary needs to develop a model which estimates the ultimate incurred cost. And this is highly subjective and requires significant actuarial judgment, as there's very limited data available about how the claims costs might develop. For example, with the Kendrick versus Bluescope case, the accident was reported quickly, but it took over 7 years for the claim to settle. And as a result, this actually causes a lot of uncertainty about the current and the future performance of the portfolio. And hence, it's quite challenging to estimate and then to communicate the required pricing changes that are, that will achieve the target profitability. And I guess this, as a result, this is another example where it is very important to get engagement both from portfolio management and from claims. By working together, the actuary will be in a much better position to be able to interpret the data, understand the claims environment, and estimate the ultimate costs much more accurately. The actuary also needs to consider how to explain the claims development model, as if it is not understood, the portfolio manager is very unlikely to act on your recommendations, because they will be more focused on the uncertainty rather than on your recommendations. And finally, talk about industry. So why are we talking about industry? Well, we think that industry is a key rating factor across a range of commercial insurance products, such as property, liability, and workers' comp. And the key challenge of rating by industry is that a large proportion of industries in the Australian market are actually quite small in size, which means that the historical experience at an industry level may not actually necessarily reflect the underlying risk. And what this means is that the actuary needs to find a way to group industries which have similar underlying risk to enable the pooling of claims experience, whilst at the same time still trying to reflect the actual experience for the larger industries. And yes, insurers have used a number of methods to do this, ranging from relying purely on underwriting judgment to using credibility methods based on the ANZIC hierarchy. Unfortunately, the ANZIC hierarchy has a key limitation that it's actually not reflective of the insurance risk. And so to overcome this issue, some insurers have started grouping industries based on the risk characteristics instead. So some examples of risk characteristics for liability insurance which may be used are things like exposure to crowds and exposure to labour hire. So another area we'd like to talk about is corporate insurance. And why we're talking about it is because, well, it's actually even more challenging for an actuary to add value in corporate insurance, as the risks are generally much more unique, the data quality is generally poorer, and the risks are generally individually underwritten, with both cover and excesses set at an individual policy level. However, even with these challenges, we think that actuaries can actually add a lot of value in this area as well, and we'll talk about some of the key areas we think they can add value. So firstly, experience rating. So it's actually a standard technique that's used for rating purposes of corporate fleet policies. And this tends to be an appropriate approach due to the high frequency and low severity nature of the portfolio. In coming up with the premium for a policy, the insurer will generally blend the experience of the policy with an assessment of the underlying costs based on the exposure of the policy. Now, when developing an experience rating framework, the actuary needs to consider, one, the weighting given to the actual experience of the account, which depends on a number of factors, such as the size of the account, the amount and the stability of available claims, of available historical claims experience. For example, a policy which has a high excess will have a much less stable experience. And it's not unusual for some corporate accounts to have excesses in excess of $50,000. You also need to consider how to make allowances for infrequent events, such as large losses and natural perils, and whether to apply the same weighting to each of the historical years of experience, or whether to give greater weighting to the more recent claims experience. The second item there, so an actuary can also actually develop a framework which provides a case underwriter with an indication of the overall costs that are expected to be incurred for a particular policy. So at the most basic level, the framework can provide the case underwriter with an understanding of the total non-claims related costs, such as admin expenses, reinsurance, commission, and the profit margin. The actuary can then actually further enhance the framework by including an estimate of the claims costs based on either the portfolio level data or the actual experience of the policy, of course allowing for things such as IBNR, inflation and large losses. Now, because of the large differences in the corporate risks, the framework should allow the case underwriter to modify the assumptions to allow for their assessment of the risks of the policy. And finally, the last item I'd like to cover is optimizing reinsurance. Now, as the corporate risk exposures can be very high, reinsurance arrangements are used quite widely as a way to both limit the size and the volatility of the claims incurred by the insurer. Now, the actuary is actually able to add value in this space Firstly, by assessing whether the current arrangements are value for money. Has the insurer been able to recover a large proportion of the premium paid to the reinsurer, or has this reduced the volatility of the claims experience? And secondly, actuaries can also develop models to compare the impact of the different reinsurance arrangements on both the expected profitability and the volatility of the portfolio. This will actually enable the portfolio manager to decide which reinsurance arrangements are optimal based on their strategic targets around both expected profit and volatility of profit. So finally, we'd like to summarize. So for an actuary, in our view, for an actuary to be effective in commercial insurance, they need to have an in-depth understanding of commercial portfolios, the market, and the environment, work in partnership with the portfolio manager, have a detailed understanding of the data and its limitations, and adopt appropriate pricing methods which allow for the specific characteristics of each portfolio.
Thanks, James and Alina. I think we have time for a couple of questions, if anyone has questions. Is it too late in the day for questions? No? You can just stand up and use the microphone in the middle and just state your name and which company you're from.
Thanks, James and Alina. It's Lawrence from Commercial Direct in IAG. And good to see you guys again, since we worked together for about 6 years. So I just had a question around optimization. And, you know, we've seen personal lines insurers using optimization for a number of years, and some commercial insurers starting to optimize portfolios in different ways. What do you see as the actuary's role in trying to optimise the commercial insurance pricing as the next step from just doing a technical analysis?
I certainly see that as an opportunity, particularly I think as insurers move off the legacy systems and able to identify things like customer. So I guess in commercial insurance, a customer may buy a range of insurance products, and I think there's probably opportunity to optimise and to see which type of customers might take out what combination of products, and you then might be able to optimise rather than at an individual portfolio level. You may be able to consider how you might optimise the profit at a customer level. That would be an opportunity, I would think.
Opened the doors at the back, so I think that means we're out of time, unless anyone has any other burning questions. Okay, I'll take this opportunity to remind you all to fill in your feedback forms if you haven't done already for this session, and if you can join me in thanking these guys again. Thank you.